Before the Caribbean was a map of nations and resorts, it was an enormous, restless roadway, one carved not from soil or stone, but from wind, swell, and ancestral memory. Long before Europeans ever imagined these waters, indigenous navigators treated the sea not as a barrier, but as the most reliable path from one world to the next. At night, they read the sky like scripture. By day, they trace the silhouettes of distant islands rising from the horizon. Their canoes, carved from colossal trees and sealed with resin and fire, were among humanity's first truly ocean-ready vessels. These early seafarers stitched together an archipelago into a continent of their own making, one defined not by borders, but by movement. This is the story of how waves became roads, how islands became neighbors, and how the foundations of Caribbean identity were laid long before the region had a name. Chapter 1: The First Canoes and the Invention of a Sea Road. The Caribbean Sea has always demanded respect. Stretching across nearly a million square miles, it hosts swirling currents, shifting winds, and waters that can shift from calm glass to roaring tempests in moments. For early human beings, thousands of years ago, such a landscape should have been a natural barrier. Instead, it became a form of liberation, a path toward new islands, new resources, and new lives. To understand the arrival of the first seafarers, we must begin with the archaic age peoples, who reached the archipelago somewhere between 5000 and 1000 BCE. These were not tourists drifting on accident. They were deliberate navigators who had developed an intimate relationship with rivers, coastlines, and open sea. Their journey into the Caribbean began not with luck, but with innovation, specifically with the creation of the region's earliest canoes. The birth of the Caribbean canoe. The canoes of the archaic age were masterpieces of engineering for their time. In a world without metal tools, the process of turning a massive tree into a vessel capable of carrying families, tools, and food across turbulent water required both imagination and patience. Archaeological evidence from Antigua, Trinidad, and parts of Cuba reveals several consistent features of early canoe making. Stone adzes sharpened by hand to carve the tree's exterior. Fire hollowing, in which embers were strategically placed inside the log to soften and char the wood. Shell scrapers used to refine the interior. Natural resin applied to cracks and seams for waterproofing. One tree might take weeks or months to become seaworthy, but when it did, the result was a durable, buoyant craft capable of gliding along shorelines or venturing far into open sea. Dugout canoes were long, narrow, and steady, often able to carry multiple adults and children. Their design allowed them to harness both paddle power and the natural pull of ocean currents. For the first island hoppers, these canoes were not simply vehicles, they were acts of faith. Physical proof that human beings could shape their world right down to the water beneath them. Entering the archipelago, when these early sailors pushed off from the mainland, most likely from the coasts of South America, they confronted the vast blue corridor that separated them from the first chain of islands. The Lesser Antilles, low silhouettes scattered along the eastern edge of the Caribbean, were the gateway into the region. On clear days, some islands could be seen from others, forming a broken but discernible path. The people arriving in this period weren't carrying pottery or agriculture yet. They were hunter-gatherers, skilled fishers, shell collectors, and coastal foragers. Their success depended on understanding seasonal abundance, predictable marine behavior, and the rhythms of weather. Each island introduced new ecological opportunities, unfamiliar shellfish, different types of coastal flora, unique stones for toolmaking. Their movements were likely seasonal at first. They explored for short periods, harvesting, scouting, and learning, before returning to the mainland or traveling to another island. Over generations, the pattern shifted from exploratory visits to permanent settlements. Reading the sea like a map. To navigate the Caribbean without compasses or written charts required a sensory understanding of the natural world that modern sailors often struggle to imagine. Early navigators relied on several key methods. One, stars as guides. At night, the sky above the Caribbean offered reliable patterns. The appearance of certain constellations could signal direction, season, and even weather shifts. These star routes became some of the earliest fixed points in navigation. Two, swell patterns. Waves carry information. Their direction, size, and rhythm can indicate nearby coastlines, open ocean conditions, or hidden reefs. Indigenous sailors memorized these patterns, learning to feel them through the canoe's wooden frame. Three island silhouettes. From many parts of the region, the outline of one island can be seen rising from the ocean long before a traveler approaches it. Early seafarers learned the unique shapes of different islands, the jagged ridges of Dominica, the low curves of Barbados, the volcanic peaks of St. Lucia. Four, bird movements. Certain species fly predictable routes between islands, especially in the early morning or late afternoon. Following these patterns reduced risk and offered reliable clues about land ahead. Cloud formations. Clouds often gather over islands before forming anywhere else. A cluster of cumulus clouds on the horizon could indicate land even at distances of 40 to 60 miles. For archaic age peoples, navigation was not merely a skill, it was ancestral knowledge passed by memory, observation, and ritual. Every journey contained both danger and promise, and each successful crossing deepened their understanding of the Caribbean as a connected world, transforming the sea into a roadway. Over time, as generations moved through the archipelago, the sea became more familiar. Patterns of travel emerged, first short hops between neighboring islands, then longer and more confident journeys. Certain channels offered predictable currents that sped travel. Others, known for fierce waves or unpredictable winds, were avoided except in emergencies. Archaeologists have traced the spread of specific stone tool types from Trinidad up through Grenada, St. Vincent, Guadeloupe, and eventually Puerto Rico. This progression is evidence of intentional movement, not random drift. The early islanders were mapping the Caribbean through lived experience, turning uncertainties into traditions. Their voyages were not migrations in the modern sense. They were explorations rooted in necessity and curiosity. New fishing grounds, new sources of stone, and new plant species all offered incentives for movement. And as these people encountered each island's challenges, they adapted, creating technologies, rituals, and strategies that helped them thrive. Seasonal mobility and the first inter-island culture. Although permanent settlements did develop, mobility remained central to survival. In the archaic age, movement was not a disruption of life. It was life. People traveled to exploit seasonal fishing opportunities, gather fruits and nuts not available on their home island, find sheltered bays during storm seasons, exchange information with other groups, escape droughts, storms, or resource depletion. As a result, the Caribbean's earliest societies were fluid rather than fixed. Home was not strictly defined by one island, it was defined by networks of places visited across years and generations. The emerging question: all these innovations point toward a central mystery. How did these early arrivals transform a dangerous sea into a functional transportation corridor instead of an obstacle? The answer lies not only in their technology, but in the worldview they developed, one that saw the sea as connective, not divisive. This worldview would lay the foundation for everything that followed. But to understand how movement evolved from survival to cultural identity, we must look to the societies that followed them. People who didn't just use the sea, but mastered it at a level that reshaped the entire Caribbean world. Chapter 2: Networks of Exchange, Trade Routes, and Cultural Flow. Movement in the Caribbean did not slow after the first arrivals. It accelerated. Around 500 BCE, a new wave of people entered the archipelago, the Salidoid, originating from the Orinoco River Basin. They brought with them a more advanced set of technologies, social structures, and aesthetic traditions. And above all, they brought a philosophy of travel that would turn the Caribbean Sea into a vast cultural highway. The arrival of the Salidoid navigators. The Salidoid peoples were distinct from their archaic predecessors. They possessed highly polished, red-on-white ceramics, agricultural knowledge, particularly the cultivation of cassava, more sophisticated canoes with better hydrodynamics, complex social and ritual practices, experienced leaders skilled in organizing long voyages. Their movements across the Caribbean were intentional and organized, not exploratory. Over several centuries, they traveled from the mouth of the Orinoco northward, settling chain after chain of islands until they reached Puerto Rico and beyond. Reinventing mobility, canoes built for long distance. Salidoid canoe technology represented a leap forward. Though still carved from large trees, these vessels were longer, more stable, and more capable of carrying substantial loads, including families, tools, ceremonial objects, food supplies, and even agricultural starter kits. Some canoe types were large enough for 20 or more passengers, significant amounts of pottery, animals such as parrots and small dogs, trade goods to exchange on arrival. These canoes were not merely transport, they were symbols of identity and prestige. The ability to build, maintain, and navigate them reflected skill and knowledge inherited through generations. Canoe makers held high status, while navigators were revered as people who communicated with both the physical and spiritual world, creating inter-island trade networks. The Salidoid expansion established ongoing trade routes linking dozens of islands. These networks were dynamic rather than static, shifting with seasons, marriage alliances, resource availability, and political needs. Archaeological discoveries reveal how far their influence extended. Among the most prominent trade items were ceramics, distinctive red polished pots with white painted designs spread widely, helping archaeologists trace Salidoid movement. Stone artifacts. Certain types of greenstone and volcanic rock traveled significant distances across islands. Shell beads, crafted from conch, pearl oysters, and other species, traded both as adornment and ritual currency. Cassava tools, including ceramic griddles, burin, crucial for processing the starchy root into edible bread. These goods were not traded for profit in the modern sense. Instead, trade strengthened alliances, reinforced kinship ties, and distributed resources to prevent famine or shortage. Navigating a complex sea, travel was not random. Indigenous sailors had a detailed mental map of the Caribbean, built from generations of trial and observation. Their routes followed predictable patterns tied to prevailing winds from the east, northward flowing currents along the island chain, seasonal weather windows that offered safer travel, reef systems where fish were abundant, turtle migrations, which acted as biological signposts. By synchronizing travel with these natural rhythms, they created a transportation system far more coherent than it appeared to outsiders. The social logic of movement. Movement was woven into the social fabric of life. Marriage alliances. Leaders often arranged marriages between people from different islands to strengthen diplomatic bonds. Canoes would carry entire wedding parties across long distances, turning ceremonies into inter-island gatherings. Ritual exchange. Certain objects, stone pendants, ceremonial vessels, shell artifacts, were traded to reinforce spiritual obligations. These exchanges kept communities interconnected in both material and ancestral ways. Seasonal travel. Some islands were known for particular resources. One might offer excellent clay, another ideal stone for tools, another abundant turtle nesting grounds. Travel for these purposes created predictable annual circuits. Occasional raids. While generally peaceful, inter-island raiding existed. These confrontations were rooted in resource competition or long-standing rivalries. Yet even conflict followed maritime rules of engagement. Understanding ecology as navigation. One of the most overlooked components of indigenous navigation is ecological knowledge. The sea was read not only as water and sky, but as an ecosystem. Manatee migration routes often paralleled safe canoe pathways. Fish spawning seasons indicated where currents concentrated nutrients. Turtle journeys aligned with certain wind patterns, allowing sailors to track both simultaneously. This ecological intelligence made travel efficient and reduced risk. The cultural impact of constant mobility. As movement increased, cultural blending followed. Certain ceramic designs spread far across the region. Religious symbols traveled with migrating groups. Musical instruments, dances, and linguistic patterns circulated widely. Mobility created shared aesthetics, shared rituals, shared social expectations. This blending produced a pan-Caribbean cultural sphere, long before Europeans imagined the Caribbean as a unified region. Midpoint, the question of identity. By the height of the Salidoid period, the Caribbean was a tapestry of connected communities whose identities were anchored in movement. Thus emerges the chapter's central question. How did mobility shape the identity of Caribbean peoples long before Europeans arrived? The answer lies in the worldview taking shape, a worldview in which islands belonged not to isolated groups, but to moving galaxies of relationships. This worldview would be inherited by later peoples and transformed into one of the defining features of Caribbean life. Chapter 3, Migration as Memory, the Ancestral Logic of Movement. By the late Ceramic Age, the Caribbean seafaring tradition had matured into a sophisticated system of mobility. The peoples who inherited this legacy, ancestors of groups later known as Taino, Kalinago, and others, took the patterns established by earlier navigators and transformed them into cultural institutions. The world of the late Ceramic Age. By around 800 to 1200 CE, Caribbean societies had developed. Large settled villages, complex chiefdom structures, ceremonial plazas, communal agriculture, hierarchical leadership roles, distinctive artistic traditions. Yet despite these advancements, the sea remained central to daily life. Migration, mobility, and ocean knowledge formed the backbone of social organization. Canoes as cultural identity. Late Ceramic Age canoes were marvels of craftsmanship. Some were over 50 feet long and could carry dozens of people. Early Spanish observers, centuries later, recorded seeing fleets of canoes moving between islands for trade, diplomacy, or war. The canoe wasn't just a tool, it was a cultural symbol representing ancestral continuity, the legitimacy of leaders, the unity of extended kin networks, the connection between the physical and spiritual world. In Taino cosmology, the sea was populated by spirits, ancestors, and forces requiring respect. Voyages were therefore sacred as well as practical. Diplomacy across the sea. Island groups maintained diplomatic relationships through regular canoe travel. Chiefs sent emissaries carrying gifts, ritual objects, and messages. These political exchanges helped maintain peace and prevent conflicts over fishing grounds, agricultural zones, or sacred sites. Diplomacy also strengthened inter-island identity, shared myths, ritual systems, seasonal gatherings, war parties, and canoe fleets. The Kalinago, known for their formidable maritime skills, organized coordinated canoe fleets capable of launching long-distance raids. Their warfare was not random violence, but a structured system influenced by vengeance traditions, territorial disputes, kinship obligations, the social importance of bravery. These fleets demonstrated the high level of maritime organization that had developed across the region. Movement as spiritual geography. Caribbean oral traditions frequently reference ancestral migrations. These stories explain how communities originally arrived, why they settled certain areas, and how their ancestors interacted with sea spirits or protective deities. For example, some tales describe mythical canoes guided by stars. Others recount sea creatures that protected voyagers. Many speak of origin journeys leading from one island to another. These narratives preserved collective memory across generations and reinforced the importance of mobility as a spiritual concept. Language spread through movement. Linguists studying the Caribbean have identified patterns showing that Arawakan languages spread through waves of migration that followed maritime routes. The similarities between speech in Puerto Rico, Hispaniola, Eastern Cuba, and parts of the Lesser Antilles reveal that these communities stayed connected through travel, trade, and intermarriage. Settlement patterns shaped by the sea. Communities often built villages near sheltered bays that offered natural harbor protection, access to reefs for fishing, view corridors to monitor approaching canoes. The placement of villages, ceremonial plazas, and agricultural fields reflects a worldview shaped by constant interaction with the sea. The roots of modern Caribbean migration culture. Perhaps the most enduring legacy of these seafaring traditions is the Caribbean's modern culture of movement. In today's Caribbean, migration is common. Families are spread across islands and continents. Travel defines opportunity. Diaspora identity is central to culture. This is not a recent development. It is a continuation of a mindset forged thousands of years ago. The sea has always been a connector. Caribbean people, long before nations existed, saw mobility as a natural extension of life, a way to maintain relationships, pursue opportunity, and survive adversity. Resolving the final question. The final question posed in this documentary was, how does the ancient logic of movement explain the Caribbean's modern identity as one of constant travel, connection, and cultural blending? The answer is this. Caribbean identity was shaped by movement before it was shaped by colonization, slavery, or global trade. Long before forced migrations or economic migrations, there were chosen migrations, voyages made from curiosity, exploration, diplomacy, and kinship. These ancestral traditions taught Caribbean people to see the ocean not as an isolation chamber, but as a bridge. Today's Caribbean diaspora, scattered across the world, yet connected through memory, culture, and family, is the modern expression of an ancient way of being.